I know this is not directly germane to what you're addressing before us today, but it did remind me of how challenging it is to work with all the various jurisdictions. And there is a reference to bringing TriMet more dynamically into this process. And I just want to say that, again, I'm not criticizing anybody because it was a marvelous event, but as a resident and a parent who was kind of caught in the gridlock, I think that I would encourage you to give us some guidance down the road. I believe as the Parks Commissioner, I'm now replacing Commissioner Saltzman on the Pioneer Courthouse Square Board. And any advice you would have at a later date for me of how we could address that, because I do think there's still some coordination issues to be worked out. The two other points that I wanted to just raise are, in your report, you refer to an appeal process. If a sponsor's application for a permit is denied, apparently it comes to you, Sue, for a decision, and then potentially comes to the council on the appeal side. But at page A11, it says that your decision may be appealed to the city council, but only after the sponsor has exhausted the administrative administrative remedies under our code. Can you just briefly tell us what are those remedies between your decision and it coming to council?
I think in this particular case, there are no other steps there.
So it would come to us?
It would come to you.
Okay. And it's on a pretty fast track?
Yes.
In terms of...
And luckily, we've not had to do that. If you've had any experience with the special events permits, you know that it's all about coordination and cooperation. And in every... in the 2 years that I've been director of the Revenue Bureau, I believe in an almost every case we've been able to work out some sort of compromise. So that really is our goal, to not have any appeals at all.
Good. Well, thank you. And the other piece has to do with the recommendation around the free speech permit. I am very supportive of your recommendation that there be no cost recovery for those permits. Mm-hmm. But my impression as a citizen has been that we sometimes have these spontaneous events, and what you're trying to promote here is advance notice.
Correct.
So there can be proper planning. So what are the tools available to us to encourage the proper notice so that all of our jurisdictions can actually do the planning, sometimes the planning for the safety of the people marching, as much as for the safety of the spectators? What tools do we have to encourage people to give us that notice?
Can you ask me that question again in September when we work through the details?
You're going to come forth with some recommendations.
Yes.
And did I hear you correctly that you intend to reach out to the advocacy community, get some guidance on
correct.
That?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any possibility of doing the fee changes sooner than September?
Take a deep breath. I don't think so. I think to be inclusive and to resolve the issues. I know staff's been working on some of the standard routes. I know they've been working on some of the a la carte items. Really, the free speech is one of the biggest issues that we're going to have to work through. And I think just the time needed to meet with all of the stakeholders, draft language, review language, get consensus. I originally had June, and I pushed it out to September because I think it's a little aggressive. So short answer to your question, I don't think so.
A couple of things. One, great job. Really appreciate it. Back in, 1997, removed the barriers to the free speech permits. A little bit of historical background, Commissioner Fish. We removed that used to require insurance. There used to be a fee. And part of the reason, as implied in your question, we wanted to be able to plan with people instead of these spontaneous, unpermitted events. We wanted to have no barrier so people would come forward, get permits, and we could have that conversation. And when they do, it usually works out very, very well. So I hope that we can keep the spirit of that moving forward, because the alternative, which is sort of the unpermitted, impromptu, that's where we historically have had dangerous situations and real conflict and unnecessary disruption to the local economy. This will be controversial. We've taken a run at this three times since I've been around, so we're not making decisions today, but when your recommendations for implementation come forward, council will need to do a real gut check, because hell hath no fury like an event sponsor whose fees are going up hundreds and hundreds of percent and who have participants in the tens of thousands. It is a lot of pressure pushing back on us. One thing that I think might help is in the months ahead, if you haven't already, and maybe you have and I missed it, is to really do a good job of booking the costs associated with regular events, mm-hmm. so that council will see sort of the cost benefit. To the extent, and this might be asking for too much, but to the extent you can eyeball the economic benefits, different kinds of events have different kinds of economic benefits and return on investment. And I know how very, very difficult that is, but to whatever you can do in that regard, I would appreciate it. The other thing I've noticed in helping Jeff with the Portland Triathlon is there are a certain number of events in the current policy that are considered free. Or reduced price events, and some of them, I'm not passing judgment on whether the existing events that get the reduced price are appropriate or not, other than some of them have been in that queue for years, and so it makes it really hard for any new events to get time on the calendar and then to get in at a reasonable price. And then I like your approach of coming up with sort of standard routes, with a la carte options, and I know you've thought of this already, so I'll just sort of underscore it, reiterate it, and that is on those standard routes, the trade-off of having standard routes is that if you're a business on the standard route, then you're going to get the standard impact mm-hmm. more than others. So there's these excruciating trade-offs we'll have to make in the future, but you're absolutely on the right track, and this is the best work by far of any previous effort, so thank you. Any other comments from council? Yeah, we'll get to that. Has anyone signed up to testify?
We have two people.
Good.
Sarah Smith and John Torino.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Are you the Sarah Smith of the Portland Jazz Festival, which starts this Friday and runs through the 23rd?
Where are tickets available?
Tickets are available at your local Ticketmaster outlet, Portland Center for the Performing Arts, as well as the Portland Jazz Festival offices at 133 Southwest 2nd Avenue, Suite 420. I did, however, wear my bicycle chain today to talk to you briefly about my other hat, which is with...
Carla.
Sorry.
So go ahead. Your name?
Sarah Smith. I'm here on behalf of Providence Bridge Pedal. I just wanted to state that we recognize that we're not only a bicycling event, but we are a community event. Having read the headlines in the paper today about the challenges facing council in regard to the current economy and the monies that you need to be accountable for heading forward into the future, we recognize that, and we've been very grateful for the process that these folks have been going through in deciding on how to address the revenue recovery process. And our request is simply this. We do not want to subsidize other events, and we do not want other events to subsidize us. We recognize that our event fees are going to go up, most likely in the upwards of 300%, not this year, if the changes don't come until September 2009, but for 2010. And that's it. That's the simple request. We understand what you face. We have 20,000 people each year that come out to walk and ride our beautiful bridges. We are the second largest event, bicycling event in the United States, and we'd like to keep it that way. And thank you for all your efforts in trying to make this an open process.
Thank you. Hi, John.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is John Torino. I am the Executive Director for the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Business Associations, and I'm speaking on behalf of that organization this morning. We fully understand the need for the city to make changes to the current special events permit process in order to recoup at least some of the costs for special events that are held in the city. We're pleased that the Revenue Bureau listened to and incorporated some of the ideas from our participants during this study, and we support the development of a fair and affordable fee schedule. We'd like to remind you that most of the events held by our member business district associations do not include admission fees, nor can these typically small organizations, which are supported by local merchants and teams of dedicated volunteers, always pay the full amount of the cost to the city for supporting their events. Since their purpose is partly marketing, getting neighbors out on the streets to see local businesses, and partly a celebration and thank you to the neighbors who do support local businesses, all of which are important to the economic development of Portland's business community, we trust that the Revenue Bureau will take these conditions into consideration as the new permit rules and fees are developed. We do lend our support to passing the resolution so that the Revenue Bureau can continue to collaboratively develop program changes, and we request the inclusion of at least one representative from the APNBA in the working group or on the advisory group as the Bureau implements this resolution. Thank you for providing me with the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you both very much. Anyone else like to testify on item 114? Unless there's council discussion, Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
I just have a question and or suggestion and in response to Mr. Torino's testimony that since the city recognizes small business associations and in land use issues, we waive appeal fees for neighborhood associations, there might be some benefit in looking at events that are officially sponsored by recognized business associations and giving them a particular status. So I'm interested in that. Very good work. And I was very shocked to see that we're spending $844,000 on the staffing of special events, and yet we only recover $45,000. So that's an $802,000 subsidy from the general fund for these events. And while they do bring business into the city, often there are also a lot of folks coming from outside of the city to participate in these events, and some of them, the neighborhood parades obviously are very much more locally focused. And so that also might be a sort as to whether they're intended to attract people from out of town, and then weighing the benefits of the economic benefit versus the cost to Portland taxpayers. But it is an excellent study. Thank you very much for your good work. Aye.
Fish.
I want to join with my colleague in thanking Sue and her team for an excellent presentation and a report. And to Jennifer McFarland, I just want to say, as someone who whose spouse teaches at PSU and who's been, and personally, in my case, been very actively involved with the Hatfield School for about 10 years, I'm delighted that you had a role in this. And when we talk about the collaboration between the College of Urban and Public Affairs and this body, there's lots of different opportunities. And clearly here we get the benefit of your skill set. But I want you to also know that another benefit for us is we get to scout talent as positions become available within our system, and we're delighted that you're now on our radar. As the Parks Commissioner, I have to go through a similar exercise soon because the issue of cost recovery has been framed for us as well, and many of the issues you've identified in this report are applicable, at least at the values level, to challenges we have at Parks. So I thank you for that. It gives us a head start. I think what Commissioner Fritz said, though, is very important. I want to underscore it. We are trying to navigate through the worst economic downturn in my lifetime, and I just turned 50. And we have a hierarchy of values which are guiding the tough decisions that we have to make at council. And the first level of decision is, can we, through a combination of efficiencies and restructure, deal with the pain? The second level is, can we, through fee increases or in some way recovering a little bit more of our cost, can we manage the pain? And if we can't get there through efficiencies and restructure, if we can't get there through cost recovery, we're forced to cut programs. And I have yet to find a citizen group that has urged us to cut a program. In fact, I've learned there's not a single program in any of my bureaus that people want to cut. So I take seriously the responsibility to exhaust all of our options around efficiencies and cost recovery. And what this report highlights is that we as a city do make a significant investment in these events. And we, in tough times, have to recover a little bit more of our costs. Because if we don't, it means we have to cut somewhere else. So you've given us a good roadmap. I appreciate the discussion. I look forward to your recommendations when we convene, I guess, in September. And I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I also want to thank Sue and Jennifer, Allison, Sergeant Vopel for your great work and all the other stakeholders. But I do, I want to say this is good work, and I look forward to approving something in September that will bring our cost recovery rates more in line with our comparator cities. I mean, I'm just looking at tables here where, you know, most cities are recovering 80%, 85% of event cost, and we're down, as Commissioner Fritz said, around 5%. And it just, that's not a prudent practice, and one as we cannot continue in these tough times. Understanding, the special events operate on shoestring budgets themselves, and they all want to use Portland and our parks and our bridges more or less in the same four-month window of time, which kind of exacerbates the issue. But we do, I'm confident this process you will lead and come back to us in September. It seems to have a lot of good support from all the people that will be affected, and and I look forward to seeing something that ultimately results in a cost recovery that's more fair and responsible and prudent. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Thanks again. Aye. All right. That gets us to item 115. Carla, can you please read the title?
Yes. Accept a joint City of Portland and Multnomah County Task Force report on options for funding animal services in the city.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you. We have Chair Wheeler, members of his staff, and then we're going to have members of the task force after you guys?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just start off. Thank you, Chair Wheeler, for coming. We greatly appreciate you being here for really what is a very, very important discussion, and one that you've been a great partner on since we began this. 2 years ago, probably 2 years ago. Portland is an increasingly dense community, and is a community that values a lot of things. And one of the things that we value, I think, is kind of our designation as a animal-friendly city, a pet-friendly city. And I think it's fair to say that Portlanders want animal services. The reality is, however, we have because of the funding problems that the county is facing, we have a challenge to provide the level of services that Portlanders want. And as in all taxes, people like the tax best that somebody else pays. And that certainly doesn't exclude animal owners, as Ted and I have both learned. Most of the current Multnomah County animal services that are funded by the county's general fund. And 71% of the budget for animal services comes from the county general fund. Anybody following the finances of the county will know therein lies the problem. 80% of those funds that the county uses comes from taxes from people who live within the city of Portland. Portlanders want services. They want services because of dog barking. They want services related to those that don't leash their dogs. You know, so there's a huge demand that Mike will speak to for those services. The headquarters for the Multnomah County Services is in an aged, decrepit, is that too strong of a term, building located in Troutdale. So it really is outside even anything close approaching to the center of the population that uses the services. The intake of dogs and cats is up 41% at that shelter since 2000. And sadly, 45% or 4,438 of those animals were euthanized in 2007, a rate that is unacceptable to many citizens and those of us, including Ted, that are trying to figure out how to address this phenomenon. The other component of funding animal services beyond the property tax is pet licensing. And unfortunately, only 14% of the pets in Multnomah County are currently licensed. There is a huge under-licensing that exacerbates this problem greatly. The task force believes that even though we might greatly improve our collection rates, And that's something I'm focused on, and part of the partnership Ted and I will be bringing to you is us having an increasing role in that area. But even that, according to the task force, will not fund animal services appropriately. So we have a huge problem that is getting more difficult as we increase urbanization, which leads to higher density in Portland with people having more pets. Animals in Portland deserve better than what we are currently treating them. That's something that joins everybody that's working on this problem. And in many ways, it's the dark, dirty secret of Portland, the way we are not providing services to animals. I, in approaching Ted about this problem a couple years back, could have found no more of a willing partner to try to tackle this issue. I learned quickly, and Ted's kind of wry smile at me should have been a signal at first. I learned quickly why it's so troubling as I got on the email chain from people who have, let's just say politely, strong feelings on this subject. And it is a really challenging issue, but we have approached it, I think, in a very thoughtful and deliberative way, creating a task force that this council authorized and the county authorized a couple of years back. The task force has completed its work to us, and now they've kind of dropped it in our laps collectively to take the next step. And we're honored to have Ted Wheeler and his folks here to make some remarks. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Leonard, Mayor, Commissioners. There's not much I can add to what Commissioner Leonard has already said, except to say we live in a community that, as a core value, we value our pets, and we care deeply about the safety of those pets. We want to make sure that there's humane treatment for all animals in Multnomah County and the city of Portland. We want to make sure that we can continue to provide the types of enforcement that's required to ensure that the community remains livable. As Commissioner Leonard pointed out, currently Multnomah County is responsible for all animal services in Multnomah County, including the city of Portland. Yet the reality is that about 80% of the services currently provided by Multnomah County Animal Services are consolidated within the city of Portland. It would be disingenuous to talk about the county's ability to financially support the level of services that are necessary. Multnomah County is now in its ninth year of budget cuts. This is probably going to be our most substantial year of budget cuts. And the bottom line is that animal services has suffered as a result, as an institution. Commissioner Leonard mentioned the physical plant, but there's also been reductions in enforcement. There's been reductions in our ability to provide the level of services that we'd like to provide. Our animal services folks have done an outstanding job with adoptions and trying to drive increased adoption rates throughout Multnomah County. But the fact remains that the resources just haven't been there to adequately address the current needs. So Commissioner Leonard and I met in the spirit of collaboration, in the spirit of solving what we saw as being a critical problem in our community, and we brought together a mix of citizens, a mix of city and county staff members, and some of the best minds in the community when it comes to animal services and how we could work together to improve those services. Today, we're here to accept the report from that task force who spent over a year looking into this issue in depth. It is my recommendation that you accept that task force recommendation. The reality is that the next step is to look at specific strategies, including specific funding mechanisms to actually be able to invest in some of the recommendations of that task force. So without further ado, I'll turn this over to Mike Oswald, who is the Director of Animal Services for Multnomah County.
Thank you, Chair Wheeler. Mayor Adams, Commissioner Leonard, and Commissioners, Mike Oswald, Director of Multnomah County Animal Services. We are pleased today to bring this resolution to you to accept the report from this joint city-county animal services task force. And I'd like to just take a moment of your time just to introduce some of the task force members who have joined us today. And very quickly, if I could have the task force members stand, please. Thank you very much. We've got Joyce Briggs, who represents the Animal Shelter Alliance of Portland, Sharon Harmon, Executive Director of the Oregon Humane Society, Brian Lally, the business representative from the Oregon ASME, Thomas Lanham, who's the Operations Division Manager from the city's Revenue Bureau, Phyllis Johansson, a citizen and friends of shelter animals, Sue Disciple, who is our facilitator, who will be leading us through the next portion of this, Hank Miggins, who's a citizen and former animal services director, Ron Morgan, executive director of Dove Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital, Christina Phillips, who's executive director of the National Animal Interest Alliance, Kathleen Stokes, who's a citizen but also a planner with the Bureau of Development Services, Robert Simon, who's a citizen and attorney here in Portland, Paul Van Orden, noise control officer for the Bureau of Development Services, Lila Wickham, environmental health manager for Multnomah County Health Department, Jen Walker, animal aid and citizen, Mark Warrington, the public safety manager for Portland Parks and Recreation, and we couldn't have done this without the help of Aaron Johnson, who's assistant to Commissioner Leonard. So I thank you all for joining us today. They'll also be available when we get to a questions and answers portion. What we'd like to do this morning is have Sue Disciple, who's been the facilitator for this task force which has been meeting for about a year, run through a very brief PowerPoint presentation. It's a fairly lengthy report that we've submitted, and we wanted to highlight some of the key portions of that report. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sue.
Thank you. And I guess, Clerk, do I need to let you know that we're moving to the presentation? Great, thank you. Well, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. And I just want to say it has really been my privilege to serve as facilitator. You can see this was really a stellar task force. And we had no-shows, no holdouts. Everybody was just full speed ahead. It was truly a privilege to work with them. I'm going to make this brief presentation on the task force behalf, and then I'm going to let them come up and take my seat as you have questions, because they're really the topic experts on this. I think the background pretty much has been covered by Commissioner Leonard and Chair Wheeler. I do want to note, though, that when the task force was chartered, it was specifically to make recommendations for restoring and enhancing animal services beyond the reduced service status quo, and to identify sustainable funding mechanisms that puts the bulk of the cost of operating animal services onto animal owners. So it was really to begin to find alternatives to additional general fund funding. So, and I think that's important to the context of the report, because every person on this task force is committed to animal welfare, but we will talk a lot about dollars and cents in the report. So with that, first, I'd like to start off by framing the problem, and I'm going to go through this somewhat briefly because I think Commissioner Leonard and Chair Wheeler have touched on some of these things. But the basic fact is that the Multnomah County General Fund cannot keep pace with the demand for animal services. And animal services really, it's kind of a misnomer. They're really people services. And as Commissioner Leonard pointed out, the bulk of service provision correlates with density. So there's growing demand for urban services such as barking dog response, user-friendly pet locator services for lost pets, leash and scoop law enforcement, and those kinds of services. 80% of those animal services, as Commissioner Leonard noted, are provided here in the city of Portland. To keep up with the growing demand, obviously something has to give. New funding sources are essential. Part of the problem currently is that, as Commissioner also pointed out, only 14% of dog and cat owners in the city comply with current licensing laws. So the fees, even though in any event would be a relatively smaller percentage of the overall funding package, most of the funding coming now from general fund, that amount is much reduced because people aren't complying. Four public workshops were held. They were hosted by our task force in support of the work that they did and to get information from the general public about funding preferences and service preferences. In those workshops, members of the public were asked to identify what they saw as the most acceptable funding sources in addition to the general fund funding for animal services. And complying owners at those workshops were absolutely adamant that owners should that owners should obtain licenses and pay their fair share before any new revenue sources and the kinds of sources they identified as potentially acceptable were increased licensing fees or pet food surcharge. But they were adamant that before anything like that should be considered, everybody ought to pay their fair share of what's currently required by law. So, meanwhile, at the Multnomah County Animal Shelter, intake of lost and abandoned dogs has increased, as the commissioner pointed out, 41% in 2007, with 45%, 4,438 animals euthanized in the year 07. And I have not heard that things will look any better when everything's compiled for 08. To this mix, the county animal shelter is old, it's undersized, and it's inconveniently located for just about everybody in the county and for everybody in the city of Portland. I don't know if you've gone there to the shelter recently, but, I mean, there is signage, but even finding it is difficult, even for somebody who's been there before like me. When I had my first meeting with Mike, I drove around Troutdale for a while before I could get to the shelter. And people that don't have easy access to transportation sometimes give up. And there is a belief among people on the task force that some of that 45% of animals euthanized are lost pets of people who've driven day after day out to the shelter or hitchhiked or gotten there somehow, but have finally just given up. And then at one point their pet shows up, and that pet is lost. So cognizant of this, City Council and the Commission and residents are raising concerns about the status of animal services. So now let's talk about the opportunity. Expectation and demand is increasing with urbanizing Portland, but I don't regard this, and I know the task force does not regard this as a problem. This is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for change. Another opportunity exists in the 86% of dog and cat owners that currently don't license their pets. As Thomas Lanham has demonstrated in his analysis for the task force, compliance by even a slender majority of pet owners could contribute significant service revenues. Part of the problem is that minus any real enforcement effort or mechanism, and minus a perceived benefit of licensing on the part of pet owners, people just don't comply. But we can build participation by establishing a value-laden pet registration program, by enforcing the law and providing tangible program benefits for pet owners, and for the human environment that people can feel good about complying with and that they perceive as benefiting them. The city and county have established a successful partnership and track record of collecting city and county business taxes. That partnership can be leveraged to increase compliance and increase collections of pet license fees. And, you know, we're talking here about the registration of pets as if it's only a funding issue. But really, it's a public benefit. It's a public interest issue. As Hurricane Katrina tragically demonstrated, if you don't know where pets are located and you don't have any kind of resources or plan to evacuate them or protect them, in the instance of a disaster or a public health crisis, those services need to be there. If a 911 call comes in from a resident, responders need to know, is there a dog in that house? Are there animals that we need to be concerned about in that house? Right now, Multnomah County, if your pet is lost, here's what you do. You get in your car every day, and you drive around to the various places that your pet might be in the region. And if someone finds your pet, what they do is they go drive around and look to see if somebody put a notice up on a telephone pole. Now, clearly, we can do better. As Commissioner Leonard pointed out, Portland views itself as the animal-friendly city, and residents are increasingly finding that rate of euthanasia, 45%, heartbreaking and unacceptable. Portland also prides itself as an incubator of accessibility, innovation, and excellence. And it said, though, that if you look in your checkbook, it'll tell you, just as an individual, if you look in your checkbook, it'll tell you what your values are. Well, if you look at our facility for the care of abandoned animals, the inadequacy of that facility for the animals, and the inaccessibility for humans, really tells a story about us and our values that's counter to what we say and what we think about ourselves. So clearly, there's an urgent need for change. And it may seem like this is a difficult time to consider new service fees and new capital projects. But if you think back to the recession in the early 80s, that was the time that we forged ahead on light rail from Gresham to Portland. We initiated the Oregon Convention Center. We supported a bond measure to rescue our downtown library. This may be the right time to implement change. And via a city and county partnership, this may be the right time to take steps to dramatically improve quality of life for our two-legged citizens who are growing in number here in our city, and also for our four-legged citizens. So what the task force is recommending and proposing is a city-county partnership and a framework for the future. And since the task force charter really focused on funding, let's start there. So the first thing the task force proposes is getting rid of the ineffective licensing program in favor of a pet registration program that provides tangible benefits for pets and owners and encourages and builds participation. So value-added elements could include things like reduced cost spay and neuter, reduced cost microchipping, a free ride home for your lost pet. There's ways to excite people about this program and to add value. Second, the task force proposes funding to restore and enhance services through increased registration fees. The program would include waivers or reduced fees for those unable to pay, but also would have tiered rates so that pet owners wanting enhanced services could get those services at a premium. This fee-based revenue can support services most important to residents, such as increased shelter hours, comprehensive lost and found services, spay and neuter programs. Now, feet on the street staff to address urban problems such as barking dog complaints, leash law enforcement, dangerous dog intervention would be funded through a small premium added to registrations in the city of Portland to specifically pay for these urban services, as other jurisdictions in the county wished those services in their own communities, they could opt in for that premium fee program. Compliance with the registration program would be enforced and a professional collection system implemented through the City Revenue Bureau so that all pay their fair share. And it's important to note that fee-based revenue builds over time. So service restoration and enhancement can be phased in over time as participation in the program and as program revenues build. It's also important to note that fees alone cannot support an animal services program. The task force looked at many different options and examples from other cities and came to the conclusion that it's not possible to support a program that includes animal shelter. It's not possible to fund that through fees alone. And the task force recommends continued support by the County General Fund for baseline services, particularly the shelter facility operation. Which brings us to the need for and the recommendation to establish a modern, accessible, and innovative countywide animal shelter and service facility. This is critical. Although capital projects were not part of what the task force was asked to consider, it's kind of the elephant in the room, so to speak. You can't, the service enhancements really don't go far enough without a new facility, a modern and accessible facility. The current facility just can't carry the load. There's significant economy of scale in a shared city and county facility. the task force, upon studying of Commissioner Leonard's question, should the city take this on for the city within its borders and let the county just provide services in the rest of the county, other jurisdictions? The task force said there is too much economy of scale lost if we further balkanize a regional system that is already more separate and balkanized than it should be. Also, examples here in Portland, like the EcoTrust building, demonstrate ways in which the task force envisions a new and centrally located facility could be a real catalyst, so to speak.
Very nice.
Thank you. Well, sorry.
Manny thought it was funny.
Right. Chair Leonard's
a catalyst, everybody. A catalyst. It was funny.
We appreciate your dogged leadership.
I knew that was coming.
You're like a monkey on my back. You know that.
So anyway, so far we've only talked really about the revenue side, but there is a cost avoidance side also. A strong spay and neuter program coupled with humane education and public outreach will solve some of the tragedy of animal abandonment and euthanasia and other problems and reduce costs over the long term. The task force recommends charging an implementation committee with taking the next steps toward these recommendations. So let's take a look at the estimated cost. And again, please keep in mind, the task force was not asked to address capital costs. So the costs analysis focuses on sustainable operational funding. And so this is what the year one startup expenditures, when there are some extraordinary costs for startup. The funding as proposed, as you could see, is just under $500,000. And it would include initial pet registration, marketing, and public education to get rid of the discredited pet license brand that no one seems inclined to comply with, and establish a new pet registration program that is really redesigned to have value. We'd also need to set up the IT database integration at the Revenue Bureau to enable them to do the collections work for the program. And we'd also need an initial transportation vehicle to get the spay and neuter program started. But then by year five, which is illustrated on this slide, the task force estimates this program would be fully up and running and phased in. And the important part of this slide are the two numbers at the bottom, which illustrate that restored and enhanced services can be fully funded by this program proposed by the task force. The programs include 7 to 8 feet on the street urban services officers. That's kind of what we're calling them as a placeholder here, because it would really be kind of a new endeavor. That would actually be this would be what would be paid for by the urban services fee. These would be folks who would be out there doing pet education, making sure that laws are being complied with relative to pets, that parks are safe. That animals are safe, and responding to, for instance, barking dog complaints and things like that that have no response today. You're just kind of out of luck to deal with your neighbor today if that's your situation. Also, it would provide additional walk-in shelter hours and spay and neuter services. Now, if you take a look at that community outreach and education number, at over $600,000 annually, that's pretty eye-popping. And I wanted to make some remarks about that. That number is really an aggregate of all the advertising and community education that it will take to inform people about the pet registration program, to do outreach on spay and neuter, to do humane education, and to support a user-friendly lost and found system. Those concepts were developed, and they're written about more fully in your report, by individual committees. The committees did not really have time to get together and see what kinds of economies of scale there might be. So it's our guesstimate, however, that number, once we really see how many FTE could work across those different program elements, we believe that would be reduced. But we just took each of the committees' estimates of their own committee's needs and added them up. And that is probably something that needs further work. So I think in closing, the important points are these. We're at a crisis point now. Now, we've been at a crisis point, but we are truly at a crisis point now with animal services. A pet registration program that delivers value can garner participation, and it can pay for these additional services. Citizens are adamant that all must pay their fair share first, so compliance is critical. The time is actually right to take action, and the first action steps are easy. Adopt the report and launch the implementation committee. Thank you for your attention. And I'm going to vacate my seat, and questions are best addressed to committee members.
Well, I want to thank you, Sue. That's an outstanding presentation, and you've done a great job guiding this task force. This is amongst the toughest kind of issue I've ever had to deal with, and you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And ask some questions of before you guys leave.
Oh, okay.
I'm not letting you go. It's not that easy.
You want to get out.
Once out.
You mentioned a couple of times compliance or leveraging from the BLF. Was that leveraging from the BLF sort of administrative infrastructure?
Yeah. Well, Ed Thomas would be able to answer that better, but mainly it's the collections function. Okay. It's just really professionalizing and being adamant about that collection, similar to the business tax. In terms of compliance, once we have 7 or 8 feet on the street, and potentially, too, other people who work in official capacity for the city could also be charged to monitor compliance.
And in terms of, I'm sorry.
That's where the compliance comes in.
In terms of the registration, which I think is a good change, did you look at or is it envisioned that where pets are sold, where pets are cared for at veterinarians, where pet stores where supplies are, that people could register at those locations as well with a web-based approach so that we're really making it very, very convenient for folks?
Yeah, that was a part of the initial startup cost, is getting that ubiquitous opportunities for people to get involved and to register. Yes.
So registration wouldn't just occur at the one building. It would occur at multiple sites in the community,
yes.
Even private businesses.
Yes, and okay. Easily online.
And then you talked about startup costs for spay and neutering, and I know there's the Feral Cat Coalition. I've been to their fundraiser and the Humane Society programs. I mean, how much of this is, have you looked at just supporting existing nonprofits that are already doing that kind of work?
Could I yield my chair
yes.
to Joyce Britz?
Well, and the short answer is I met with the Humane Society, and they are just not interested in dealing with some of the issues that Ted and Mike have to deal with in providing services because, according to them, they actually have some opportunity to deal with, I don't know how else to put it, but the kind of the cream of the crop of animals, and the county has to deal with a more challenging population of animals, so they're frankly not interested in.
Mayor Adams, if I could just answer that real quickly, there are all of these nonprofit organizations like the Feral Cat Coalition and the Oregon Humane Society, and even all the business side with the veterinary community. They're all part of this network with the public facilities, and so as we have been exploring these alternatives, it might make a lot of sense to maybe partner some of these functions off with these existing nonprofits. It wouldn't necessarily be the city county running a program, but taking advantage of what's out there. And because there is this network, there's a lot of great resources and organizations out there that we can make this work.
Thank you.
Mike's exactly right. I am a representative to this task force from the Animal Shelter Alliance of Portland, which is 10 organizations, including animal controls, nonprofits, and the veterinary associations, who are already working in coalition around this. And Multnomah County is an active part of that. A key part of that, and the whole spay-neuter part of it you mentioned, the program that's outlined in your plan heavily leverages the utilization of most of those organizations to provide spay neuter services, and has a role for the government in that, which is so heavily leveraged that the impact is of what you'd be investing in that is far, far greater. There's two key things to that. One section of what's put in the spay neuter program is dedicated to rabies vaccines and licenses for folks that are on public assistance, which are the core of folks whose animals are contributing to these issues. So it's providing a public safety aspect as part of being able to reach out to them and track their animals who are the most likely to end up in the shelter system. So that's one. That's a key part of that.
Thank you. Can I ask a question too? The 14% of pets currently licensed, that just seems shockingly low. What is the consequence to a pet owner if they don't get their pet licensed? What can happen to them?
Commissioner Fish, Mike Oswald. There is an ordinance that all dogs and cats need to be licensed in Portland and all throughout all of Multnomah County. And if people fail to do that, they could receive a notice of infraction, which can carry a fine anywhere from $50 to $150. What we've seen is, because cat licensing isn't necessarily as well known in the community, and that's true across the country, most of the licensing is really dogs. And so it's around 25% for dogs, but with cats being licensed, it's much, much lower. It's like 7%. And even though there's consequences with the ordinance, with a penalty, it's a matter of capacity to enforce that. That's why this concept of really rebranding it as registration is building value into this registration program, that people will want to do that because they can see the benefit not only to them as pet owners but to the neighborhood and to ensuring that important services are delivered.
And I should know the answer to this, and Commissioner Saltzman may know the answer to this, but to the extent we have off-leash areas in our parks where we allow people to bring their pets onto city property, do we currently have a requirement that those pets be licensed in order to access our public spaces?
If I could add, currently there's an IGA between the city and the county through the Parks Bureau to purchase one officer who is devoted to the park system to enforce leash laws, enforce licensing, and ensuring that people are in compliance with the rules in the park. And that's been a real successful program for the last 5 or 6 years. And that's kind of one of the models we've been looking at as we develop this partnership into the future, is that the city, through the Parks Bureau, has said, we need this level of service, real specific, dedicated to working in the park system. The county provides an officer who can go out and provide that enforcement capacity. And that, it seems to be a successful model. I think this kind of builds on that concept.
One final question. Can you just put the human face on it for me of the consequence to other pet owners, or both two- and four-legged creatures, of having animals that are not licensed? There's a greater likelihood of what occurring?
If they're not licensed? Well, licensing is a form of identification. Dogs and cats, when they become lost or injured on the streets and are picked up by our officers and receiving emergency care, unless there's something on this dog or cat that tells us where they live or who their owners are, there's no way of finding the owner. So we have to rely heavily on owners to be searching for their animals. So the immediate benefit for a pet owner is that it tells people that this is my dog, this is my cat. If it's lost, if it's injured, if it ends up in a shelter, somebody's going to call me and let me know that that's where it is.
But I would add beyond that, because this is an issue that a lot of people bring up, why is this important to me? I take care of my pets don't interact. I mean, the same argument applies, in my view, over families that don't have kids that go to public schools but pay property taxes for kids that go to public schools. If you're a pet owner, by definition, you love animals. And you can't view the animal world as that which you just own, but all cats and dogs, many of whom end up in the shelters being euthanized because we don't have the funds to pay to take care of them because people don't license their pets to a large extent. And so it's a community responsibility for all of us that are pet owners to pay our licensing fees, whether we personally see a personal benefit from that or not, for the broader community of animals that live in the community.
But I'm also guessing that for licensed animals, there's a greater likelihood that those pets have had the proper vaccinations and the other things which not only protect those animals but protect people coming in contact.
That's correct.
I think you both make very good points. At its root, animal services is a human. It's dedicated to protecting public health. And it's an accountability of the pet owner to show that that animal has had its rabies shot. And if the animal bites someone, that it's you can track through to the owner and see whether or not you've got a public health issue for that person. The majority of the calls that come to this organization are people who have issues, some of public concern for their own safety because of a dog bite or a roaming dog, or concerns for their property. It's concerns about animals that may be yowling out. So it's kind of protecting our entire community to provide these services. And I think across the country, you see that that's something that is borne by the community as a whole, not just those who have animals, because it's keeping up a level of the public health.
Also, just want to acknowledge that the comment you made about how we track missing pets now, I mean, there's a telephone pole at the corner of 39th and Knott, which has all the little flyers attached to it for cats and dogs that are missing. I mean, that's a consequence of not having a system for tracking animals. So thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
So do we have an estimate of how many dogs are getting their rabies vaccinations?
Yes, we do, because the licensing is also a record of the rabies vaccinations.
That's not my question, though. How many dogs are getting vaccinated but are then not licensed?
That we don't know.
Because I think that's also a factor. The last time, and then moving to cats, there's a much lower registration rate for cats than there is for dogs.
Yes.
And the last time I checked, Multnomah County is the only county in Oregon that requires rabies vaccination for cats. And I wondered if the task force had looked at differentiating between indoor cats and indoor-outdoor cats, whether there's any, what are the other barriers to people registering their animals, particularly cats?
Well, I think that's the work that needs to be done as we figure out how to brand this new registration program. What is the value to pet owners? What's the value to the community? And I think that's the kind of work we need to be doing, looking at other jurisdictions, seeing what's working and what's not working. And frankly, Portland and Multnomah County has been one of the leaders across the nation in trying to recognize that cats are part of the family and part of the community too, and we need to make sure that they're vaccinated, they're licensed, and because people want their cats back. And now we're seeing more cats than dogs entering the shelter, and that's a trend across the country. So but to understand what would motivate someone to say, hey, I need to do that. I need to license my cat, and I need to, because I can see the value and the benefit for them.
Well, I'm suggesting as we move forward that there might, as we're rebranding licensing to registration, that there might be some value in, we're also important looking at trying to get people to keep their cats inside because of the impact on birds.
Yes.
So if there were a differential, if you said you have an indoor cat, then is there, what's the relative value in requiring rabies vaccinations, for example? Would separating the two mm-hmm. make any difference? And I think that's something to look into, especially when we're actually doing relatively well with registering dogs at 25%. The three jurisdictions in Oregon, Bend, Ashland, and Medford, are only at 33%. That's any better than us. And the highest that you had in your records was 43% in Nashville, where there's no fee. So it's apparently mm-hmm. not the fee that's the barrier, and I'm wondering what else is it that's stopping people from getting their animals registered. Perhaps separating mm-hmm. the two, at least for indoor cats, might increase that revenue stream.
I think we all agree with you. Incentivizing people to keep their cats indoors is a really important part of this. The reason why there's been so much emphasis on intact animals and why there's a differential licensing that gives a lower rate if your animal is sterilized is that those are the animals that are really like, and for cats, obviously, they're ones that end up outdoors if they're usually getting the opportunity to procreate. But those are the ones that are much more likely to be adding to the troubles that we have for dogs and for cats. And we do know that there's a very careful way to target the audiences whose animals are contributing to that. So we agree with you, and it also kind of counts on a paradigm shift of being able to really give value to people to register their animals. you know, as opposed to seeing it as a punitive big brother sort of a harm.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Well, I haven't read the report yet, but it looks very good. But I guess what I consider to be the most problematic area probably is compliance and enforcement. I guess do we or would we under these scenarios have the ability to urban service officers to go on private property to see if a dog in the yard actually is registered?